You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello and welcome to Friday's Royal Blue Podcast. I'm your host, Ian Kroll, and today I'm joined by the Echo's Everton FC reporter, Chris Beasley. Chris, how are things? You've had a good couple of days off, missed the Nottingham Forest.
Yeah.
All the Nottingham Forest controversy, and now you're back. You can't wait to get stuff off your
chest. Yeah, we're gonna catch up on all that, Paul and myself. Yeah, it's Joe's turn to be off now. So, yeah, back into the thick of things, and obviously the 777 stuff this morning. So, yeah, keeping me busy.
Absolutely. We're also joined by Echo Sports editor Paul Wheelock, Big Blue. Paul, it's a rare appearance. You haven't been on the pod for a while. So glad to have you on. And yeah, you definitely can't wait to get stuff off your chest for the Forest.
Yeah.
Forest stuff.
Always a pleasure to be on, lads. Always a pleasure to be on. Yeah. Just hopefully next time I'm on, we'll talk about wins rather than points deductions and takeover weights. But yeah, life in Everton at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, it is an Everton free weekend, but once again, we don't play again till Bournemouth, but we have got plenty to speak about. Yeah. Before we get going, what do you make of the new setup?
Love it. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, saying home from home, isn't it? It could be it's like a bit of like an Everton bedroom, isn't it? Something like that.
Looks very, very similar to my son's, to be honest.
But well, we got the Everton programmes provided by Sport Media, also Chris Beasley. You've whacked up a collection of Everton programmes over your time, and we've got them there. Everton scarf and a grand old team book as well by a former colleague of ours, Dave Prentice, as well. So, yeah, I think we're always looking to improve aesthetically, you know, our audio. So this is a one step, you know, towards doing that. If you're watching, you'll know that we are live on YouTube and Facebook. So please, please, please give us a like, give us a subscribe, and please send in your comments, send in your opinions, get your questions in. I'll put them to Chris. I'll put them to Paul. And I'm sure they'll have fun answering them. The agenda, well, as mentioned, there is plenty to speak about. So I've broken it down into four parts. We're going to talk about Leicester's PSR breach. We're going to talk about Everton's up-and-coming hearing. We're also going to talk about a little bit of international football, but, you know, we're not a big fan of international football over here, but Jordan Pickford and Jareth Branthwaite, you know, have been selected for the England squad, so it would be remiss for us not to speak about that. And he has faced some, you know, a bit of strange criticism, Jordan Pickford, this past week, particularly from Roy Keane, Gary Neville, and a couple of the TalkSport presenters, so we'll talk about that. And also, some fantastic pictures of Branley Moore surfaced on social media this past week. Our colleague Joe Thomas was lucky enough to go down there, but there's been rival fans, you know, throwing some weird and wonderful jabs, if that's what you want to call it, at the design and of the stadium. So we're going to talk about that as well. But before we get into it, Chris, you did a really, really good interview with Everton's most successful captain, Kevin Ratcliffe. Yeah. We did a video interview. It's also on our Royal Blue Podcast channel. Do you want to just give it a plug, talk about that?
We'll start with that. I mean, thanks for sorting that out for me, Ian. Obviously, we put that one together, and we've got Derek Mountfield coming up next as well, so hopefully that'll be another terrific talk with him, with Ratcliffe, centre-back partner from the glory days. Yeah, it's our new series, Goodison Park, My Home. You know, it's a once-in-a-lifetime event for all of us, for all Evertonians. You know, the move from Goodison Park, the club's home since 1892, first purpose-built football ground in England, to the new stadium at Bramley Moor Dock, which we're actually going to come on and discuss later on. But yes, just collating all the memories of playing at Goodison Park, because it is a unique football venue, and, you know, a special football venue, not just for Everton, but for English football. And, I mean, what a guest to start with. Kevin Ratcliffe, like you say, the Blues' most successful skipper. He thankfully said yes to my invite. We met over at the Cheshire Cat in Cristleton, and he was great value and plenty of great tales about, you know, his time at Everton. So yeah, check that one out on our YouTube channel, also on Spotify, Apple. It's on all your different formats there, and hopefully the first of many.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. Really good interview. Yeah. Really good listen. You know, if you're a podcast listener, then, you know, do it while you're doing the dishes. Do it while you're on a run. Do it while you're, you know, in bed. That's what I usually do when I listen to podcasts.
Go to bed with Kevin Ratcliffe.
Yeah, absolutely. Everton's most successful captain from that period of the 80s. So let's get to it then, Paul. I'll start with you, and then I'll come on to Chris, because obviously Chris has done his plug there. But
yeah,
let's talk about the... first of all, let's talk about the Nottingham Forest news. You know, me, Joe and Gav spoke about it on Tuesday. It was a really well-received podcast and we got some good feedback, so I just feel it's only right that we talk about it with you guys who haven't had your say. What did you think when you saw the news that Forest had been deducted 4 points rather than the same as Everton 6?
Well, I think it was not... I wasn't surprised that they got deducted points, because the last commission more or less said it on our appeal that they feel that for the punishment has to be points deduction, so that didn't come as a surprise. But given the fact that I think it was 77% more they breached PSR by, yeah, the fact that they only got four, to me, was staggering. Like, I think six was too large for Everton. I think three or four would have been, you know, a fairly agreeable, I say that to an extent, I think agreeable kind of penalty. And then I wouldn't have been too bothered that Forest would have got the same. But it's just, I know it seems that they admitted the breach first. It seems that their mitigation seems to have gone down more in favour with that commission. But it can't get away from the fact that it seems to be such like an arbitrary process now that we could be getting different, you know, different verdicts, because it's a different panel. And I know the Premier League clubs, and Everton being one of them, you know, agreed to this kind of system, but it just doesn't seem fair. And isn't this what it's supposed to be all about, really? You know, I'm not read completely through the report. I'm going to spend more of this weekend doing it, but I just don't know how Everton can have a £19.5 million breach, then Nottingham Forest nearly £40 million, and they're getting less points deducted. I know they were a Championship club at one point, but it's just head-scratching, isn't it, really? Like, you know, yeah, what are Everton going to get now? What are Leicester going to get? Are they going to get it, you know, this season? It looks like next season now. It's just, to be honest, like, for something that affects Everton's future, so it's going to have such a big impact on our immediate and maybe long-term future, I'm beginning to not get bored of it, but you just kind of look at it now and just go, oh, I just don't know. It's really hard to take, kind of thing. I know it's such a shame what's happening to Premier League football, you know, at the moment, because if there was hard and fast rules, you break it, you get a 6-point deduction. At least you know what you're dealing with at the moment. Just having a clue. It does feel like, if they're not making it up as it's going along, no one knows what's going to happen. It's just so frustrating.
Chris, this is the third commission within this process, yeah, of obviously two for Everton so far, one for Nottingham Forest. What I would say, this commission, if I was going to give it one positive, they seem to break the points deductions down as a clear process.
Right.
As opposed, this is from me looking at it, as opposed to what they did with, first of all, Everton's first verdict or decision, and maybe even you could say Everton's second one, even though they actually did it as well, give a you know, a bit of a process to it. But Nottingham Forest clearly flouted the rules. They knew exactly what they were doing. They purposely went out to spend as much money as they could to obviously survive and not go down into the Championship. Mm-hmm. And they seem to have been rewarded for owning up to this fact immediately.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, you murder somebody and then go, ah, it was me. Oh, yeah. Don't give me life imprisonment. No. Yeah. As Paul has used this phrase that that everybody seems to be coming out with, it is like they're making it up as they go along. The main takeaways from it is, as Paul said, a bigger breach, but a lesser points deduction. I mean, what the Forest Commission actually did do is that they referenced from the Everton appeal. I'm trying to keep up with this now. Yeah. When they said that 6 points was required for a breach, but then the Forest Commission said they don't know where the Everton Appeal Commission got that from. So that's why you're getting different numbers, and hence they're making it up as they go along. I mean, obviously, they're all very more than capable legal people handling this. I certainly remember doing a piece on the Everton Appeal Panel, and, you know, these were people with double firsts from Oxford and Cambridge and highly esteemed people in the legal profession. But if you look at what they're coming up with, yeah, it is totally arbitrary. And as you say, Paul, because there's no sort of set rules in there. People are sort of coming up with their own numbers all the time, and those numbers are changing whatever club it is, whichever commission it is, on any given day. Just seems to be just so arbitrary. That is the right word, I think, because there isn't any sort of set rule, like you say. Ian, the cases are very different. Everton are in the bottom three for a Premier League net spend for the past 5 years. Now, there's a table. I've done an article on it myself. We all know about the money they've spent in the past. Farhad Moshiri, the owner, admitted to that himself when he said we've not always spent large amounts of money wisely. We know all about that, the profligate early years of Moshiri, but that the tap's been turned off in that respect. Everton have spent so little in the transfer market, so it's a totally different case than Forest, like you say. Who got promoted for the first time in, I think, 23 years to the Premier League, and they spent £250 million on over 40 new players. I mean, it's just blatant. If you, as an outsider, somebody who didn't know the ins and outs of each case, you could look at that and say, I can see where that's a big problem. They spent loads and loads of money on lots and lots of players, whereas Everton is much harder to sort of look at, because you're certainly not spending it on the players. As Sean Dyche said, it's not made them on pitch powerful. So they've seen very different cases, but as we said, they end up with totally different outcomes, and one which isn't favourable to Everton. Okay, Forest have gone into the bottom three now, but perhaps Everton should be further away from that position if they'd have had a lesser points deduction even after appeal, and obviously Forest with their one. It's interesting, actually. I've got a piece coming up later today, so if people can check that one out. Speak to Tom Evans, our former colleague, who still does the cricket for the Echo. He's now at the Daily Mirror as a sub-editor, and he's a Nottingham Forest fan. And, you know, without going too much of a spoiler into that one, I think that one of the first questions I asked him was Forrest's deduction more, less, or what you expected? And he admits himself that he thought Forrest would get 6 points and got six. So that's coming from a Forrest fan. That tells you all you need to know, really.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Well, I remember having a conversation over the phone with a friend like probably about 2 or 3 weeks ago when we knew this Forest hearing was coming, and we were both agreeing, we were just adamant that Forest have to get the same as Everton. You know, this is obviously in the Everton bubble, you know, a little bit of bias, but it has to be the exact same. And now the fact that it's not, have, you know, the Premier League, Independent Commission, have they not just shot themselves in the foot slightly? It's also damning as well on the Premier League, the fact that they recommended 12 for Everton, as far as we're aware. They got 10. On appeal, it was reduced to 6. Then, when it was the Forest hearing, we understood that the Premier League recommended 8. It was given as 6, but reduced to 4 because they owned up to it straight away. That's damning to the Premier League. You're just literally flip-flopping around and you don't really know what you recommended because you don't know your own rules.
It's supposed to be... It probably is the best league in the world, isn't it, in terms of quality? There's probably no getting away from that. But, like, to be honest, it feels a bit tin pot. It feels like if this was a grassroots league going to the end of the season and you had promotion and relegation, I think if you were, like, a Saturday or Sunday team, you'd be pretty furious, wouldn't you, that you're going into the last month of the season, you don't know if you're going to be promoted, relegated, or what have you. And let's face it, this could be the start of things to come, couldn't it? You know, you're already hearing about teams much higher up than Everton who you'd probably say were a lot better run, and they may have to sell before the end of June the 30th because to make sure that they're complying for this season. And I know when these rules were put in place, whether you argue them to protect the big six, whether it's the argument to protect clubs like from Everton getting in trouble, like they have done, you know, there's probably arguments for both cases, but I can't imagine they ever felt that they were going to have 3 cases already, and there's probably going to be plenty more cases to come. It's just making a farce of it all, to be honest. And I'm not a legal expert, so I'm sure there will be people who are put me in my place there. But you'd think that second Evan, the appeal, the kind of first Evan charge, but the appeal once they got to 6, that'd be like a benchmark, wouldn't you? Kind of thing.
Yeah.
And like now, the fact that Forest have got 4. You just don't know. Like, I know a lot will depend on, with Everton's second charge, just how big a breach we've got, and we're not aware of that. And if the breach is big, we could be banged to rights. But, like, whereas once I probably thought, oh, we might get 1 or 2 points. Now, it's not a clue. I'm not a clue, really. And, like, they're not having that. It's a good look for the Premier League. I just don't, the powers that be, I can't imagine. I know Everton and Forest, they're not a Liverpool, they're not a Man United, they're not one of the kind of, you know, the big six, but I can't imagine how this is going down well, you know, in the power, you know, the corridors of power of the Premier League, because it's terrible. It's terrible. You could go into the last game of the season where you've got 3 or 4 teams who don't know if they're up or down yet, you know, or like, you know, because probably Everton and Forest will be in that situation. Then you throw in a Luton and a Brentford who haven't broken the rules, but they probably won't know if they're safe yet. It's just it's terrible. I absolutely hate it, I've got to be honest.
No, I agree. I mean, I think I tweeted out earlier in the week that I'm just sick to death of talking about this.
Yeah.
You know, I know it's international football now, so we might not necessarily be talking about, we wouldn't be talking about this if it didn't exist, but we'd probably be speaking about Branthwaite a bit more, talking about Pickford, you know, the positive side. But Chris, one of the biggest concerns for me now, and it's for everyone, is that, you know, because this is all happening during the season, the integrity of the league is just going to capitulate, it's going to explode. Should the Premier League not now move to and I'm talking right now, for the sake of competition and fairness, move every single one of these hearings pre-season, and, you know, at least then we won't have the potential, you know, situation where Forest here and now obviously are, because we're probably going to appeal if we get a really bad one. It's all going to happen after the end of the season, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the problem, which whatever side you come down on, Everton, one of their rivals or somewhere in between or whatever, but it's just not palatable, this idea that it gets decided off the pitch after the season's has finished. That's not good for anybody, and as Paul says, you know, you'd be complaining about that grassroots level, never mind the greatest domestic league in world football. So yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's one of the things, isn't it, that another thing that happened this week, the FAB, the Everton Fan Advisory Board, they called for all these hearings to be suspended. So that's what they're saying. They've had a very sort of detailed sort of plan over that one with they call that the fan impact statement, it's called, which is going to be submitted as part of Everton's case for the second charge. And yet it is a mess that is going on during the season, as you don't know, because you've done the ups and downs, aren't you? You haven't got the 10 points and it goes down, and then it, you know, it could go up with the second charge, and then Forest and what they've got. I mean, said that they could appeal against that. We're saying, I don't even know where Forest are up to with that in terms of okay, it's not as many as a lot of people expected for them, but maybe they could appeal, or are they just going to go, oh, actually, we got away with that one? And then you say Leicester City as well. I mean, who, ironically, a lot of Leicester fans were sort of pointing the finger at Everton, weren't they, when this came out last season? But again, there's next season. Are they going to be back in the Premier League? How does that one go? I mean, all the rules, as we know, are all changing anyway in the summer, so...
Conveniently.
Yeah, conveniently, yeah. Before Manchester, yeah, City's 115 charges over, what is it, 8 or 9 year period, get addressed, yeah, as an afterthought. But yeah, it's palatable. And I don't know, do some people, I don't know, club fans of rival clubs or people who aren't involved directly, they just sort of think it's a game, and like, oh, you know, keeping you busy at Everton or whatever. And it's not a game, it's soul destroying, you know, these people's lives. No, it's just, Goodison Park's final season, next season, it'll be an absolute travesty whether it happens, you know, because of these deductions or not, you know, that would be spent outside of the Premier League, you know, the final season for the ground that stage more top-flight matches than any other ends up in the Championship. I mean, that'd just be a travesty in itself. And then, obviously, the long road back forever, and if that happened to them. But yeah, it's not acceptable on any level.
I mean, it'd be a travesty if it was done on merit.
Yeah,
I mean, because obviously you'd be very disappointed. You'd be human. Yeah. But the fact that we'd have, you know, out of our hands in a way, you know, off the pitch, it would be insane. So just a reminder, we are live, we are interactive. So please get your questions in, get your opinions in. We've got some coming in already, so I will come to those. If you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, please get them in. But, Paul, let's come to you on this. So the news kind of broke last night. We knew it was coming, but, you know, Leicester have now been charged with breaching PSR rules, and, you know, Chris kind of touched upon it already. Ironically, a team who were allegedly looking to sue Everton for breaching PSR rules. Yeah. And, you know, obviously they were the wrong ends of, you know, Everton staying up and Leicester going down. So, you know, it's obviously... maybe a little bit humbling for Leicester, but it just, again, for me, it just rolls on the fact that this is just utter chaos.
It's just a joke, isn't it? Like, you know, it's a joke. It's like, I've not really got much sympathy for Leicester.
No.
Because, as you say, they around the time, their fans were pretty vociferous, weren't they, and saying, like, Everton should get charged. I actually remember coming home from Goodison after the Bournemouth game, coming back to work, so did a bit of a split shift that day, and a Leicester fan, who's either on TalkSport or Five Live, definitely a national station, absolutely tearing Everton apart. And when that came through last night, I had a thing, I had a thought of him. You know, because like Leicester, like FFP, you know, Leicester taking away those kind of feelings. What Leicester did, you know, was absolutely incredible. You know, winning the league, winning the FA Cup, having great runs in Europe. And like, I don't think, I know they've spent money, but I don't think they didn't chase the dream that much. Like the fact that they find themselves.
It wouldn't have been for the league title win, would it?
Yeah,
not that period anyway.
No, but it just feels like that's the whole thing about FFP or PSR, whatever we want to call it now. Thanks for fair play. You know, if you broke the rules, we've all signed up for it. You've got to get done. You've got to taste your medicine, kind of thing. But like, we're not going to have a Leicester again, are we? Like, you know, we're not with these present rules or the current rules coming, which seem to, if they're more like wages to turnover ratio, the UEFA ones.
That's like, it will become more simplified, as in, you know exactly what you're spending, but it'll just make it even more of a close shop.
Yeah, for the top six, which is a lot, I still believe. I do understand they should be in place to protect clubs, and let's face it, Everton have settled far too close to the wind financially. I know they've obviously got a stadium to build, so we can't get away from that. But I do have big problems with PSR and FFP, and really, but in terms of Leicester, it's a farce that because they're now in the Football League, if they get found guilty and they get charged, there's probably a points deduction, because it's going to be next season. It's just insane. It is absolutely insane that you've got Everton, who are going to get charged twice in the same season, but for different seasons. Forest, who were getting charged even though they were in the Championship for a couple of years. And then Leicester, who could be getting charged, but you can't have them this season. It's a farce, isn't
it? When you're going to have the first team staying up in the Premier League and minus points.
it's not even, whether you agree with points deductions or not, it's not even that. It's the way it's like implemented, isn't it? That's what I think is the farce. No, this, as you said in earlier, no Evertonian is saying that Everton haven't been badly run. Like, no one is saying that.
More than anyone. The FAB say it in a statement. They called it out before anyone, the fact that they thought the club would be badly run.
The fan protests only are evidence of that, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, it's the process, isn't it? It's the process.
But this whole thing, like, I mean, all rivalries apart and what Leicester said about Everton and whatever, it was a fairy tale. It was good for football that Leicester won the Premier League, that Leicester won the FA Cup, and it's not like they were spending crazy money, like you say, Paul. I mean, it's just like protecting those who've already got the most money or the greatest resource. It's just a total closed shop. Let's have the same cartel win year in and year out, and the rest of you're not allowed to get involved, because, okay, you don't want clubs going to the wall, you know, teams like Bury who died and stuff like that, but that's not happening here. It teams have been punished. Okay, the loss is greater than they should have had, but they're not about to go to the wall necessarily. But it's like, no, don't you dare, have a go at, and, you know, trying to compete with the big boys.
One thing that's come out there from a read last night, one of the lines that Leicester kind of refused to hand over the books. So on that basis then, if that is true, if Forest were cooperative, then Leicester are going to get a substantial punishment, more than 4 points, which next season, like you said, it's probably going to be, it's going to happen next season, not going to get the points deduction this year. So, in Everton's benefit, in a way, if we're going to be in another relegation battle next season, Leicester obviously starting on. So, like I say, it's not what you want, but you know, I suppose it is what it is. But, you know, I don't think we refused to hand over our books, did we? I just thought we were that badly run, we didn't realise that we were breaking the PSR rules. I don't know.
Well, the second time they said there was no kind of funny business, wasn't there? Because that's what Evan, the first time around, before they appeared, was so keen to make clear, wasn't there, that, you know, they weren't doing it maliciously.
I think they knew, though, then they needed to cooperate straight away.
Yeah, and we have the second time around it clearly, haven't we? So you'd hope that'll work in our favour.
Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy. Let's go some of the comments. So Simon C on YouTube, a regular Royal Blue contributor to the comments. The Premier League clearly don't have any integrity, which shouldn't surprise anyone. They aren't fit to run this league, and the clubs aren't fit to make up their own rules either. Which, the last point there is quite interesting, Chris, because at the end of the day, all the Premier League clubs did vote for this.
Yeah.
You know, they voted for the process, they voted for no formula or structure to the punishment. But as I've said plenty of times, I just don't think they knew what they were voting for and getting themselves into.
Yeah, to be fair, that's actually Simon's original point, that I'm more interested in. I mean, you're right there, saying that whatever it was a decade ago when they voted for this, you know, that they didn't know what they were getting themselves in for. But yeah, I think the problem is for Everton is that they're caught in the crossfire of this power play. It's something that Andy Burnham has made reference to on many occasions, and a lot of people also think the same, is that they need to have this independent regulator brought in, and the Premier League are desperate to seem to be sort of controlling things in-house, and they want to sort of show that they can enforce these things, and that's the problem for Everton, because they've been caught in the middle of that.
Just exactly, fantastic two words that Chris has just used there, Paul. Premier League power play. That's exactly what this has been for Everton, hasn't it?
Yeah, I feel like we are so vulnerable, aren't we, as a club? We've got an owner who clearly wants out, an owner who clearly at the moment is not putting the money in anymore. The chairman obviously has passed away. Last summer, as you were talking about earlier, the board left en masse. We haven't got a permanent board member. It feels like we're sitting ducks, you know. Yeah. And like, again, no one is saying that we have not done wrong financially. The fans have protested it. The club have admitted to it now. But it feels like we are an easy target, you know, because it feels like who's there to stand up for us kind of thing. I know obviously the interim board will be doing all they can, and fans are certainly doing all they can, but it just feels like if Everton could be the easy target, if the rules are going to change next season, let's get Everton done twice this season, you know, like, because it will change. But this is people's lives as supporters. This is people's livelihoods at stake. You know, there's a bigger thing going in here. And like, I'm probably going off on one now, but I've hated this season because you go to the Everton game now and, like, you don't know, like, a goal like an Arnaud against Palace, you don't know if it's a good point or not.
Yeah.
You don't know. And, like, I know the kind of the appeal board said at the time, they did take on board what the Everton fan board had said, that fan advisory board, and they have to take supporters' feelings into account. And I know it comes down to how badly the club's been run, but it's just not right. It's not football, this, is it? It's just not this. All this uncertainty is just not football for me. So, in terms of integrity, it's, I think it's shot to pieces.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Do you think, Chris, no, this is just an open question because you're not really going to be able to give a definitive answer, but do you think the Premier League would love to do it all over again, in a way?
I'll give you a slightly different answer. They should do. They should think we've made a real mess of this. Even if we were going about it with the right intentions, we've got it wrong in terms of the process, the way it's looked, the way we've acted. Yeah, if they've got any sort of shred of integrity, that's what they should be thinking, whether they do or not.
Yeah.
Who knows? I mean, Phil Jagielka's sort of alluded to, almost like, you feel, I mean, everyone's sort of got this paranoia about their club, and it's like referees, isn't it? You always think they're out to get us or whatever. But he said, former Everton captain, it's almost like, to him, it seems like the Premier League are trying to relegate Everton. I mean, Everton have had these near misses in recent years, and obviously staying up by one goal last season within what would have been their first relegation in 72 years. It's almost like, well, we can't relegate Everton on the pitch, so we'll do all this and go to get them. But no, if they've got any shred of integrity, that's what they should be thinking.
Question then for you then, Chris.
Yeah.
Nigel Baldwin on YouTube. Good afternoon, chaps. You're run by a megalomaniac who was less than helpful with the Premier League, so what do you expect? I assume Nigel isn't an Everton fan, but he's sent in the question.
Yeah, so when he says you are, yeah. he's not.
I don't know.
It's just interesting if we're getting this sort of, well, we know, listeners beyond the Everton.
Open to that.
Fan base, yeah. I don't know if he was. Could you not say like a similar about Nottingham Forest's owner? I mean, he's no shrinking violet, is he?
Yeah, I think someone's actually described him as a megalomaniac in the comments as well.
Separate megalomaniac, accusation.
Oh, sorry, it was Nigel again.
Yeah. Well, Forrester also, yeah, it's not that, yeah. So, yeah, he's answered his own question there, but yeah. How big is the megalomaniac in terms of the points deduction? Is that coming to consideration? If it's pretty damning, isn't it? I think Michael Ball came out with this when he was doing his Echo column. Only Everton could get done on a points charge when they're owned by, on an economic charge when they're owned by a billionaire accountant. I think that's probably the most damning thing about Farm Shady in this respect.
Yeah, Paul Emma, EFC, another regular commenter. If Chelsea can get away with stuff by blaming the old regime, could that be why 777 is being drawn out, so we could use that excuse?
But I think that's probably more to do with what 777 are about and where all their complicated business interests, to be honest. I've seen there's an article about that from myself. It's gone up today. It looks like that one's dragging on a little bit longer. Interesting point. But no, I think that the 777 stuff is more at their end, and Premier League want to seek assurances just how and where all their money would be coming from.
Yeah. And Chris, let's move on a little bit then. So you mentioned the Everton Fan Advisory Board, you know, basically calling for the Premier League to suspend all PSR hearings. It was a big thing yesterday. You did a piece on it, a couple of pieces. What are the chances of that happening? Slim to none.
I would imagine so at this stage. Yeah, I think that the comments will certainly be heard carefully. I would imagine when they a lot of great points that can be taken on board from what they put in this fan impact statement, which is right, because it is an impact on the fans. It's an impact on the fans. Mentions also how it's an impact on the players. You know, they don't know it's their jobs at the end of the day, whether they're going to be you know, their achievements on the pitch get rewarded or not, because it's not their fault. It's not this team. This team, as we know, would actually be comfortably clear the relegation zone this season. I mean, it's hard as it sort of feels at the moment, given that they've gone 11 games without a victory. They'd still actually be us about 14th, but we're certainly well clear of the drop zone if it wasn't for the points deduction. Also, the employees of the club as well, the many sort of behind the scenes. I was talking to Paul before we went on air, and the closest comparison you've got is when Aston Villa went down in 2016, and I think 500 people lost their jobs then. So yeah, you know, if you go down because you're not good enough on the pitch, well, that's the way football has to be. That's why we didn't want the European Super League and that close shop. You know, that's the organic nature of football. But you know, if you go down because of that, yeah. So this is what the livelihoods that they are messing with. So they make lots of really good points to fan advisory boards, but in terms of them actually suspending the hearings, I can't just see that one happening. But you know, they're making a strong point, and it's been well made.
Paul, I completely agree with the Everton fan advisory board's point, and I think I did mention it earlier in the pod, just suggesting that for the integrity of the Premier League, all these PSR hearings just need to be moved to pre-season. So you know, any points deductions from now, you know, flows over to the next season, because like you say, we've got the baffling situation where the league's going to be sorted but appeals are going to be heard. But do we just need to be a little bit careful not to annoy the Premier League a little bit more with statements like this as well? Like I say, I agree with it. I think everything should be moved, but you know, coming out saying this is what you need to do with your business, we just need to be a little bit careful, do you think?
We've gone past that point now.
Ignore all those banners.
Yeah, we didn't mean them. Give us the points back and we'll be friends again. They're like
Forest. Forgot about
yeah.
the left.
I know. Like Forest, yeah. We're the
but it's true, because as fans, we're the only people who could stand. I know Everton did a very strongly worded statement, didn't they, from when the first points deduction was made and then after the appeal when he felt vindicated. But like, it's all we've got. It's the supporters, it feels, isn't it? It's all we've got. And like, I say this so many times, but no one was arguing that we hadn't broken the rules or hadn't been run badly. But you could see the widespread kind of anger over 10 points. It was absolutely scandalous, like scandalous. 9 points for administration.
Yeah.
You hit us with 10. Anyone.
And Premier League wanted 12.
They wanted 12. Remember? Anyone who knows anyone involved with football, even I'm sure some rival supporters would have said, if not publicly, privately, that's too much kind of thing. So that's where the anger came from. Like, yeah, I agree. And like, it should be moved now because it's a farce. But my fear is that they'll get Everton sorted. They'll get the Forest sorted. Leicester, because of the regulations, because they're in the Football League now, they'll have to do it. And then the rules will change. And then the Premier League will try and forget this chapter ever existed. And as you say, it'd probably be easier for them if Everton were relegated kind of thing. But the bad blood that would be felt and the bad publicity certainly from this end would be huge. But I agree with what the fan board said, but I just can't see them change. I think they'll just try and get it all boxed off this season and then move on like it's never happened. Like, and you know, again, who knows what's going to happen with Man City and Chelsea, but you know, I think that's what they'd rather do.
Do you think there is a danger then, and would you be surprised if this was the case, that the Premier, after the real changes, because let's face it, they're going to push them through for next season as soon as possible, if the likes of Chelsea's, you know, points, you know, breaches, alleged breaches for Chelsea at the moment, isn't it? But we know City have been charged.
Yeah.
If all that was pushed underneath the carpet, would you be surprised with that?
I can't.
It can't happen.
Sure, can't that happen? Like, we had one charge, didn't we, first time round? Yeah. Is it one again the second time around? Like, see 115 charges, like...
I think some of these, from what I've read, is that it obviously is PSR, but it also, it's different things, yeah, isn't it, as well?
Whatever happens, like, even if we weren't Evertonians here, until that's sorted, Man City, it's complete joke, the whole process, isn't it? Because I know it doesn't affect us as Evertonians, because sadly, we've not been battling Manchester City for titles and cups. You know, it probably impacts our neighbours, doesn't it, really? And that's why they are so interested in him. Probably Arsenal are so interested.
Brendan Rodgers, retrospectively, yeah, getting a Premier League.
Yeah, like, I know. But but until that's taken away how we feel about it at the moment, because we're very much, until Man City is sorted one way or the other, there can't be any kind of integrity, can they? Because, like, we've spent all this money to be terrible, and they've spent all this money to win. If it's found that they have, you know, they have breached the regulations, they've done it, and they've won every trophy known to man, really. So it is. It doesn't really, from a selfish point of view, don't really care what happens to Man City, because it's just, that's me talking as someone whose club's in a relegation battle. But from, if I take that away, I'm not speaking as Evertonian. That needs sorting eventually. That can't be brushed under the carpet. It's just too big. The charges too many.
Yeah, Chris, are you a little bit surprised that Everton didn't, you know, put out a statement following the Nottingham Forest verdict?
No, because it's not them, and they've still got another one themselves.
Sorry to interrupt, I only really asked that because I would think it would be a little bit untoward if they did, but yeah, it was because Forest used Everton in their mitigation as a major factor.
Well, that's fair enough, because Everton had come before, and it should be sort of referenced. But yeah, I don't think it's Everton's business to comment on Forest. I mean,
just the other way around.
It might be if Everton, you know, where, let's hope not, you know, to get, you know, a considerable points deduction for the second breach, which, remember, again, we're talking about all the happening in different seasons. You've got the double thing for Everton this year, because the first charge was something that happened in 21-22 season. Now we've got the second charge in the same season. And then Everton talked about the double jeopardy in the three quarters of this period, and the second charge is covered in the first charge. So, yeah, I mean, that's a mess as well. So if there was something hefty coming their way with that one, maybe you could sort of reference back to Forest. But yeah, I'm also surprised. Obviously, they didn't comment this week in Forest.
Okay, just a comment here from Barry P on YouTube. Badly run or not, we followed the general consensus, which was to cut ties with anything Russian-related. Mm. We lost a fortune in the process. It had a huge impact. So it's our understanding that in this process, mm-hmm, here, and that's going to feature heavily, isn't it?
Yeah, the losses because of the war in the Ukraine, the Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Yeah, obviously, as we remember, the USM ties were cut. Mr. Moshiri cut his long-standing business ties with Mr. Usmanov, and then there was the whole business about the £200 million deal that remained unsigned, although the club officials have actually said it's not like there was a piece of paper lying around that Mr. Moshiri just didn't put his signature to, because, I mean, that was something that was alluded to in the appeal case. But, yeah, I mean, and certainly in Everton's latest set of accounts, and that's going to be referenced, obviously, the loss of revenue because of the severing of the ties with the Russian companies because of the war in the Ukraine.
Yeah, Paul, not really a question this, but the Blues, a regular commenter on our streams on YouTube, laughable for Forest fans to suggest they were totally cooperative. I mean, it just goes back to, like, yeah, maybe you admitted it straight away, but you knew exactly what you were doing. And that kind of brings me on to, we talk about City and what they've done over the past, say, 10 years, probably knowing exactly what they were doing. But they've been able to live the dream, yeah, effectively. They've won the trophies, they've built the infrastructure, they've got the revenue sources and streams in. So, okay, I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but say, this is just speculating, if City are hit with like a 10-point deduction, they're probably just thinking, so what? We've lived a dream.
Yeah, even if you went out to League One, as a City fan, been there before, haven't you?
You come back up.
Like you say, the key word there was the infrastructure, because, like, when, obviously it's a different case, but when Rangers were liquidated in Scottish football, we were talking about this, weren't we, earlier, Paul, off camera, but, you know, it's because of City's infrastructure, because they've got it all there, the Etihad now, that amazing infrastructure they've got in place. Even if they were, like, sent down to League Two or the National League, they'd just come up in it, you know, whatever it was, 3 or 4 years, they'd come straight back up, and then you could, like, carry on where you left off.
Yeah.
Their fans would probably find it funny.
Probably would, because they've probably achieved things that they would never have imagined they could achieve. I know they were successful club previously, weren't they, before, like, the, you know, the Premier League, always been a big club, Man City, but what they've achieved, it's beyond the wildest dreams, isn't it?
They were a basket case before they got the money, and the fact that, like I said, it'd probably be like a laugh for them for a few years, go to a few new grounds, win loads of games, and then sort of start all over again.
I mean, understandably, they'd probably lose a couple of players, you'd expect even some of them, because they'd still be on the same wage and on the contract, that City be able to sustain that.
Yeah,
maybe they wouldn't, actually, if they were at, like, in League One and League Championship with their rules.
Erling Haaland scores 200 goals in League 2.
Pull Nick off back, people like that. Sean Gota.
Yeah. How many goals Haaland get in League 2?
You literally wouldn't put it past the realms of possibility, though, would you? But like I say, they've lived the dream.
A tangent, yeah.
Simon C again with another, not really a question, just a bit of an opinion. I think we've kind of touched upon this, but the Premier League are playing with the livelihood of people who rely on being employed by football clubs. Yeah, you've mentioned that 500 people lost jobs at Aston Villa. It's utter madness that they need, and they need to have a rethink of their current approach, which effectively they have, but it's going to be at the expense of now Everton, Nottingham Forest.
Yeah, it's just the jeopardy of it all, isn't it? As Chris said rightly earlier, the sad reality is the success of a football team has an impact on the employees, the wider community. So if they were to get relegated, it's obviously a very worrying time, you know, for us all. But it's the fact that no one knows if Everton are safe or how many points. You know, you look at the fixture list now, we should be looking at in a way that go, okay, how many points are they? 4 wins? It's impossible to know until the second hearing. The result of the second hearing is known, and then if Everton do get a points deduction, which let's face it, I imagine we will. Hopefully, we won't. The appeal process has got to be sped through so quickly, because that would be horrific if the season's over and you don't know whether you're up or down. And from a fan's perspective, that'd be terrible. But from if you work for the club, you know, or you're employed by someone who is employed by the club, you know, I hate all this process as it is, but that would be terrible. It's got to be sorted before then.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Well, we're 46 minutes in. So thanks for sticking with us on our live streams on Facebook and YouTube. But we're not done. Oh. We're sick of talking about PSR.
Let's talk about some football.
FFP. Let's talk a little bit about football and opinions about football, and rather than opinions about, you know, spreadsheets and financial fair play and everything else. So
Gav on today.
He's not on, is he? What is he doing? Is he just busy?
He type had an accountancy on his away with his good lady wife. That's what he tends to be doing.
Actually, it's a Friday, isn't he? He's out on the aisle.
It's our okay. Oh, yeah. Fair enough.
Don't blame him.
Okay, England play this Saturday and I think Tuesday. Yeah. Big games. Big, only friendly games, but nice to see Jordan Pickford called up again. England's number one. Nice to see Everton defender Jarrod Brandtwaite getting his first call up all. But Pickford being given a bit of a backhanded compliment this week by Gary Neville, and he's had a little bit of criticism thrown at him. A strange criticism, really, from Gary Neville, basically saying that Pickford only raises his game for England matches. Have you seen that one?
Insane. Just Gary Neville, I mean this, he has raised his game for Everton over the last couple of seasons to keep us in the Premier League, you know. Think back to that Chelsea game. That's a goalkeeper certainly raising his game, and we won 1-0. He was absolutely astonishing that day. Is Jordan Pickford probably one of the best goalkeepers in the world? Maybe not, but he's probably not a million miles from that kind of level, because he's the England number one. And I'm not a huge England fan, but my sons obviously love football. They love football, so they're going to watch England in major tournaments. And I've watched every kind of... I probably would anyway, you know, because it's Jordan Pickford. But he's been absolutely fantastic for England. I can probably count on one hand. I think there was one Nations League game against Spain where he lost his cool a little bit, gave a penalty away and had a bit of a mad moment. He's been absolutely brilliant for England. An England team that have got to a World Cup semi-finals, a European Championship final, and one of the favourites to win the Euros this summer. Gary Neville knows more about football than I will ever know. Mm-hmm. But if he thinks there's another English keeper who's better than Jordan Pickford, I'd like to know, really, because I think Aaron Ramsdale is a good goalkeeper, but Mikel Arteta doesn't deem him good enough to play in the Premier League or in the Champions League. And when he was brought back in the other week against Brentford, he made a terrible error, and I was really happy for him that he made some good saves after that, because I can imagine psychologically it must have been really tough for Ramsdale this season. But there's not a better English goalkeeper, and I don't think there's many better goalkeepers in the Premier League, full stop, to be honest. You know, maybe two or three at best. Like, I just don't get it. I just don't get the criticism of Pickford, certainly at England.
Chris, it always seems to be an easy topic of conversation from pundits to criticise or bring question Pickford's number one slot, certainly when England come around. So, you know, there's no question now that he is England's number one, and anyone who brings that topic of conversation up is just looking for just clicks, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely for that. He's certainly England's number one. I'd sort of concur with what Paul said. I think he's the best non-Brazilian goalkeeper in the Premier League. I mean, obviously you've got Edison and then Alisson across the park. Other than that, I think Pickford's the best one. For England, he certainly is. There's nobody close. I mean, whenever his understudies have had a goal for England, whether it be Nick Pope or, as you mentioned, Aaron Ramsdale, as you say, isn't even Arsenal number one now. They've made a hash of it. Pickford's proven on the big stage. He's Everton's most capped England player now. He could reach 60 caps, I believe, if he plays both these internationals this week. All those 60 caps, of course, won with Everton. He's been a model of consistency, both club and country. It's a lazy argument. I mean, like, as Paul says, Gary Neville, absolute Premier League legend. How many times did he win it with Manchester United? Nobody's questioning his football credentials or his opinions. He's entitled to those. He's been inside of the game at the top level, the way that Paul and himself or anyone else hasn't been. But, yeah, I'm not having that. It's just almost like, yeah, let's throw this one out just to be a bit controversial. Nobody close to him at the moment for England level. And personally, I think that he's certainly, like I said, best non-Brazilian keeper in the Premier League, and he's shown that consistency. I think where he has been rash in the past, you mentioned there, Paul, and obviously times with Everton as well, he's cut that out of his game to a large degree. I mean, interesting, obviously, we've got the Newcastle game on the horizon, St James's Park, so it's an interesting one for him. It's his most testing fixture of the season because, you know, being with the old Sunderland lad that he is. But, yeah, he's been incredible, and I think we're very fortunate for Everton to have him, and I think England's number one being happy at Everton because it seems that he is happy. He's under another long-term contract again. He enjoys it at Goodison Park. Because let's be honest, you know, he came to Everton in the summer of 2017 when he was spending all the money. He probably thought, you know, this is going to be European aspirations for Everton. And, you know, it's not turned out to be that. It's been those relegation battles. Frank Lampard mentioned that save you said, Paul, against Chelsea. He deemed it to be the best save of the... I know it got save of the season from Aspilicueta, but Lampard says the best save of the Premier League era. Absolutely incredible. The highest credit I could get, sort of accolade I could give to Pickford. That's as good as anything I saw from Neville Southall. You know, that save.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just people looking to be controversial.
I honestly, I'm not probably going over the top. I think it's almost like bullying. It's close to bullying. And Harry Maguire's got it as well. Yeah. You know, like Harry Maguire... Pretty good centre back, being absolutely fantastic for England.
Being
absolutely fantastic for England. Do you know if Maguire or Pickford makes a mistake on Saturday against Brazil, they would get absolutely pillared, wouldn't they? They would get, and that's quite a lot of pressure to play under nearly, because I'm sure that Maguire is certainly aware of it, isn't he? He spoke about it in the past after that own goal against Scotland. But Pickford, you know, like he could make a major error in a game like against Brazil, or he could make a major error at the European Championship, and he's got so much credit in the bank. Like you forget, like just think when he was speaking, then he saved a Jorginho penalty, didn't he, in the final?
He made two in that, like, when they lost. Yeah.
Unfortunately, it, you know, it was two of the other lads, Rashford and Saka, wasn't it?
England missed three, so Pickford saved two in the
final. Sancho or Saka? I'm sorry, I forgot. I know Rashford missed one.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they would have, fortunately, would have scored, like, Pickford would have been a hero. Like, Jorginho was one of the best penalty takers in the world, kind of thing. And I just don't like it. Like, I just think...
Well, let's have it right.
Yeah.
He's body shamed. As a goalkeeper, you're expected to be of a certain size. It's taking the mick out of somebody if the goalkeeper you say they're small. And this, you know, all these Newcastle fans with the dinosaur inflatables, yeah. T-Rexes, they're saying that his arms aren't long enough to be a goalkeeper. And I suppose that's based on anything. I mean, I look at him, he doesn't look out of proportion to me. Body shaming, actually based on nothing. Basically saying you're not fit physically to be doing your job, and it's just absolute rubbish. So, yeah.
No, yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm just going to read out some of his England stats, which I forgot to put in my notes, but yeah. I remember to put them in the phone. So, you know... Some fantastic stats here, which just back up that Pickford is England's number one, and you know there's no one else you can challenge. And you know, 28 clean sheets in 58 appearances, so that goes on. If he has two appearances there, he will reach 60. Longest time without conceding a goal, 726 minutes. Second most clean sheets in World Cup and Euros, which is 9. Only goalkeeper to save 2 penalties in a penalty shootout.
As we mentioned.
Yeah, mentioned that one.
They lot missed them on the other end.
And this is the biggest one for me, because you're always waiting, regardless of who it is, a goalkeeper to make an error.
Yeah.
0 errors leading to goals in 52 competitive matches for England. Yeah. So
I'm pretty sure he's right up there with clean sheets in the Premier League this season as well. I'm sure he's recently,
Going back to the only doing it for England.
It comes to me, do you just dislike him because of his personality?
Yeah, I think you're right. It's bullying and easy, meant to be an easy target.
Because I know he can get himself worked up. I like that he doesn't do it anywhere near as much as at all. But let's face it, that Newcastle one is fraught with danger, isn't it? Because they'll be after us that night after we rub their noses in it than we were Goodison earlier this season. But like, what you've just said there, they're the facts, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're the facts. Like, yeah, I don't get it. As you say, maybe it's just something of an easy headline. I just don't get it.
Just that those stats came from EFC Stats on Twitter, just in case you know where the reference came from. Yeah. I mean, I like Gary Neville as a pundit. I actually do. I think he speaks the truth. And he has, because I said it was a backhanded compliment, you know, he does acknowledge that Pickford has performed well for the national team. I just found it a weird criticism that he only, you know, raises his game for England, which is just, we've just all basically said that's not true. As you mentioned there, because I wrote them down, the Chelsea save is one of the best saves I've ever seen. Obviously, that save enables us to get the win, keeps us up. The biggest one was the Maddison penalty save.
Yeah. Which wasn't even a good one. He just held his neck. In terms of importance, he's probably the most important.
But it's not like Maddison missed it. Pickford saved it. Without that, we go down.
Yeah, because I was at that game. Would they have gone 3-1 up Leicester or something with that one?
Yeah. And it obviously beat 2 more points for Leicester, 1 more less for Everton.
Yeah.
Okay, read on. We've got 2 comments on this then. So Barry P again with the comments from YouTube. Southgate is a terrible manager. How can you not bring in success with the players he has available is laughable. Probably a fair comment. I know England have done well, but with the team that, you know, he's managed to put together, I suppose, or not even put together, the players that he's got at his disposal to select from, we probably should have done better. Certainly when we played Croatia in the semi-final of the World Cup, wasn't it? That was a missed opportunity.
I loved how we've gone into like critiquing England on the Royal Blue podcast. But well, ultimately, Gareth Southgate is a failed club manager at Middlesbrough. He's actually, you know, so he's very highly regarded at the FA. Seems a safe pair of hands, hasn't he? But yeah, he has had some quality. Certainly, you think on paper, England have got to be amongst the favourites for the Euros this summer. So if he, you know, don't come close to that, you have got to wonder about, you know, is he getting the best out of the players? But yeah, interesting point there from Barry.
The Blues again on Facebook, on YouTube, Paul. Seriously, what is it coming to when someone so experienced in football is coming out with nonsense like that? It's like I said.
About Gary Neville.
Gary Neville, not you.
Nick, do you have Southgate points?
Yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah, like I said, I actually like Gary Neville as a pundit, but it's just a bit of a strange one. And I thought I'd bring it up,
Agreed. Yeah, really like Gary Neville, but like as you say, if there's a better English goalkeeper, and with the greatest respect in the world to Gary Neville or any other pundit, we see Pickford every week, and he definitely raises his game for Everton. Definitely.
Just final question on this point, then Simon C again with a question on YouTube: 8 clean sheets for Pickford this season. Only Raya has more with 9, and that just
going. That's in a struggling Everton team, bottom half the table.
Imagine if we were able to score goals, where we'd be.
Well, exactly.
Okay, well, the final segment of the podcast then, I want to talk about Bramley Moor, the new stadium. Everyone's excited for it, but rival fans on social media have been having a dig at Everton's new stadium. Paul,
not helping us dig it. No,
you know, a bit of a jibe.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, it's come under scrutiny a little bit, just mainly on social media. I don't think it's any pundits, but, you know, rival fans basically suggesting it's got a perceived lack of character due to its bowl-like design. What have you made of the, you know,
you go first, bro.
Oh, it's mad, isn't it? Like, it is mad at the moment, isn't it? Like, yeah, it's
jealousy, bit of jealousy.
I've been past it, drove past it a number of times. Kind of when I've gone into town, show home, so look at how he's going. Chris, I know you've been inside it.
Yeah.
Joe, Joe's been inside it last week, wasn't it?
It was only on Monday. Yeah, it was hard on. I thought it was a bit of a Village and People then, reboot, to be honest, but it's hard out.
Then Mike's just been on Twitter, hasn't he? Kind of like responding to one of the kind of people who critics kind of say, believe you me, he's going to have an incredible atmosphere. Yeah, it looks spectacular, doesn't it? I'll trust the people who've designed it. I'll trust the people who've been inside it, kind of thing. I think the big thing was what people wanted it to be similar to Goodison, where it's as close to the pitch as possible compared to, say, even like an Emirates and certainly like the Olympic Stadium where West Ham played, a London Stadium. So if it makes it look more like a bowl for people who are never going to go in there, maybe apart from once or twice as an away supporter, and the atmosphere is absolutely fantastic and it looks absolutely fantastic, I'm absolutely fine with it. Like, you know, it's just very, very today kind of argument, isn't it, where goes onto social media and everyone piles on it, kind of thing. You know, all the pictures we see from Colin, our photographer, or any other club release like they've done this week, it certainly doesn't look standardised to me. It looks pretty unique.
I'm wound up for this one. Do you want to ask me a question?
Do you want to just go into it?
Just go, mate.
Go into it.
I've got myself so wound up now, I don't even know where I'm going to start. Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous that these criticisms. It's not a bowl. Certainly not a bowl. The designers, the technical people use that phrase because it's just what, you know, in sort of architectural circles. But, you know, it's not a bowl. It's got, that's one of the great things about it. It is steep. It is intimate in a way that a sort of an older, new generation stadium like the Emirates Stadium at Arsenal is not. And you've got to think what Everton could have had rather than this. They might have had the other, obviously, great waterside dream, which was King's Dock, which was over 20 years ago now. So that probably would have been more similar to Arsenal's stadium. It would have been great. It would have been on the waterfront. But it would be quite generic for what we see as the sort of contemporary standards now, and wouldn't be as football friendly, like you're saying, sort of recreating that intimacy of Goodison Park within a modern setting with no pillars, giving you obstructive views, getting the best of both worlds with this one. It's tight, the way that Tottenham Hotspur Stadium is. I've been there a few times now. Best stadium this side of the Atlantic Ocean, Tottenham Hotspur's. But Everton's new stadium will be better because of where it is. It won't be as plush as Tottenham's. I think Dan Meese himself, the architect, says designing, was it a Ferrari rather than a Bentley? It's going to be it's being built for performance, to create that sort of acoustics and that intimate atmosphere the way that Goodison has. Yeah, they've got Everton's version of the yellow wall at Dortmund there, the big single tier of the south stand. It's been a while since I was there now. I was due to go on that trip this week, but I was off, so Joe took my place. But I'll be looking forward to when I do get the next chance to go in there. But even back there, when I went about 15 months ago, I went right up to the top of that south stand, and yeah, it's incredible. So what could Everton have had? They could have had that other one, the waterfront at King's Dock. That never happened. Or they could have ended up, which I thought would have been absolutely terrible, out in Kirby. Yeah. You know, I think in somewhere, you know, Liverpool is probably the most sort of micro geographical obsessed place in the world in terms of, you don't live in our street, well, whatever. So yeah, forever, I just think it would have been a losing PR battle for Everton to go outside the city boundaries where I live as well, because obviously I'm on the other side of Warsaw. I'm in New Brighton. I get to see it all the time. I look across. You can actually see Goodison, Anfield and the new stadium all in one go. It's the biggest thing you can see on the waterfront in terms of, because it's right on the river, it's the most prominent thing you can see. Absolutely spectacular location. It's going to be magnificent.
I've just got goosebumps. Sorry, yeah. I've just got goosebumps.
Well, good. Yeah, because there are people who say that. Yeah, because it's the same way, the same people who call Pickford T-Rex, whatever, they say all this stuff online. It's just absolute nonsense. I've been there. I've seen it across the water all the time. It's going to be magnificent. It's the only good thing, really, about Everton, unfortunately, at the moment, is the new stadium, and that's the great tragedy of it all at the moment. It's because, as Evertonians, you should be enjoying this period. You should be looking forward, you know, wistfully to the last season at Goodison Park and all that that brings, and then the move to the new stadium. But instead, Evertonians, obviously, you've been hampered by all that points deduction talk and all the nonsense we just spent the first 45 minutes discussing here. But yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. The only thing which I would say, and a lot of people agree with me on this one, is in an era now where capacities have gone up, Anfield's now gone over to 60,000. West Ham's 60,000 plus. Arsenal, Tottenham all 60,000 plus. I'd have liked Everton to have gone 60,000 plus. That's become the new normal for clubs with aspirations. It isn't. That's the only thing I'd say about it. And Dan Meese himself has sort of touched on that and why, the reasons behind all of that. But other than that, it's going to be absolutely amazing.
Well, you've eloquently put that despite saying you're going to get worked up, Chris. But just on your point there, so I was a little bit disappointed with the capacity when it first came out. I was hoping for a minimum of 55 with room for, you know, expanding and stuff like that. It's, what is it, 52?
52.88, is it? So just under 53, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not certainly disappointed by the design or the way it looks. It's going to be absolutely amazing. There's not going to be a bad seat in the house. But like I say, is there scope for more seats to be added over time?
Not really. That's the problem with the site, because it's so tight. Yeah. What there is scope for is if and when rail, when safe standing is brought back in, there's a potential to raise the capacity by about 10,000 up to 62,000, because rather than having one person per space, I think it goes up to 1.5. So if you had those safe standing areas, it can go up to about 62,000. But I think it'd be quite difficult to actually expand on the site, and that was a difficulty. But if you flip that around, if Everton are filling out the new stadium at Bramley Moor Dock every week, they will still be playing in front of their biggest crowds in their entire history. Everton have only ever had one season in their entire history where they had an average gate of over 50,000, and it's when they won the league in 62-63. So they'll be playing in front of the biggest crowds in the club's history. But just the way that football has gone so popular now, and we believe, I got told by the club, there's 30,000 people on the waiting list now. They might not all, when it comes to the crunch, actually get that ticket just because they're on the waiting list. But given that, you know, I'd like to have seen it go bigger. So it would be difficult, but I mean, you can't have everything. And I just, you know, this has been going on since I was like 16 years old. I remember you're similar age to me, Paul. In the mid-90s, with Peter Johnson was the first to sort of moot new stadium seriously. Again, plans for what would have at the time been the biggest ground in the Premier League, because Old Trafford was much smaller back then. And the only thing was, he never said where it was going to be, whether it was going to be at Kirby or Crompton or anything.
Yeah,
but
Crompton
that's the one good thing. I mean, for all the bad things, and unfortunately the negatives outweigh the positives, certainly with Fahad Moshiri and this regime, the one thing he has done is delivered on the stadium, certainly to extent. Okay, 7-7 have been sort of footing the bills of late, but yeah, the fact that they get this stadium over the line, which obviously they will do now by hook or by crook, that's the one big positive that Everton have got, is that stadium.
No, absolutely, and I think you are right in that is limited space. I just, at the time, you know, because I think King's Dock was like 55-60 capacity, wasn't it? You know, I think that would have been fine, because like you said, you've got so many fans on the waiting list. I think the first season or two, people are just going to want to get that season ticket if it's available, regardless of like how Everton were playing. Obviously, if we're in the Championship, it might be a bit questionable, but say in like 20 years time, if something happens and Everton just kind of propel themselves up, and we just get an even more bigger fan base, and then we were looking at like, well, we should have had the 70,000 seats, 80,000. I'm not saying we should have got that then, but there maybe should have been scope. But like, again, we are limited. But Paul, I mean, we know that this stadium has been designed specifically for atmosphere. That's the be all and end all. Like I say, there's not going to be a bad seat in the house, and I've seen like weird, obviously from the haters, weird criticism of it. It looks like a Bundesliga stadium, and saying it does look like a bowl, and I don't think it does, certainly not from the outside. But what's wrong with the bowl anyway? I like a bit of symmetry. Look at Anfield Stadium now. They're just literally just trying to get as many people in there as possible, and it just looks, I think it just looks terrible.
Yeah.
But yeah, just, sorry, the question then, like, it's designed for atmosphere, and that's what, you know, can you imagine the first game under the lights at Bramley Moor? Sorry, yeah, slipped the tongue.
It is what kind of keeps you... I'm probably one of those people who's kind of a bit of a cynic, who's like, I'll believe it when I sat in there. And like, but now you can see it's going to happen, don't you? And it is just a shame with what's happening off the field at the moment. That doesn't allow you to build up the excitement, you know, for... It doesn't feel like it's the last season next year, does it? Because
it's so much
to get to, you know, before we get there. And that's all. You just really hope we stay up this season, you know, somehow, with another points deduction, stay up, and then off the field, it's sorted. I know we're not going to go on to this podcast now, but who owns the club? That's another podcast itself. But who owns the club? And we start next season with a clearer idea of what's going to happen in the last year at Goodison, because that would be a crying shame if we're doing podcasts like this again, you know, in 12 months' time kind of thing. But no, it just looks spectacular. It's our future, isn't it? It doesn't look like, you know, people were throwing, oh, it just looks like Leicester's, it just looks like Derby's and stuff like that. It just doesn't. It's just, I promise you, we're not lying here, it doesn't. Like, if you get to drive, I say, lucky people who've been so far to what's inside, I'll trust what you the guys are saying. But just from the outside, it looks spectacular, doesn't it? It looks so good.
Yeah, I can't wait. Well, we've gone long. We've gone 9 minutes into injury time. But Chris, I want you off the final word. So you've written a piece today on Everton's takeover.
Yeah.
You know, I've read the piece myself, and there's a hint that no decision is not going to be made until after Everton's second hearing, or at least maybe until a verdict's delivered on that.
Yeah, that's what seems to be coming from the 777 sources. Obviously, there's the hearing next week, so it all seems to be that the wait will go on into an eighth month, into April there, and considering that at the time when the deal was announced in September, they were hoping for the fourth quarter of 2023. It has dragged on, but yeah, the wait continues.
Okay, well, we will finish off there, lads. If people want to send you hate or positive feedback, where can they find you on Twitter?
At Paul Wheelock, capital P, capital W, all one word.
At C Beasley Echo.
What was that?
At C Beasley Echo.
C Beasley Echo. Yeah. And I am at Ian Kroll 1. So yeah, send your feedback. Your feedback is really important to us, so let us know what you thought of today. Continue to leave comments after this live is finished in the YouTube space, in the Facebook space. And also, mentioned at the start, we've got a new setup. Just let us know. Feedback, plenty of Everton, you know, merchandise, memorabilia, if that's what you want to call it. Let us know what you think. We're always looking to improve our setup, always looking to improve our audio. Also, leave us a like and subscribe to the Royal Blue YouTube channel and follow us on Facebook. That's Everton FC, Liverpool Echo. Before we go, anything else to speak about?
We don't know. Just like I said, a reminder, obviously, check out that Kevin Ratcliffe for the first part, the Goodison Part of My Home, and look forward to speaking to Derek Mountfield next week.
Yeah, Derek Mountfield is Monday, but it may go out a separate day, mightn't it? Okay, well, thank you for leaving your comments. Like I say, continue to do so, and I'll try and answer them on my own YouTube channel. I reply back to them, sorry. So yeah, I've been Ian Kroll. I've been joined by Paul Wheelock and Chris Beasley, and this has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.